This is Birth to Work Radio.
Try to convince a community that had always felt if you had a strong back, you could always make a decent living. That disappeared, but the same people stayed in the community.
The competition is much more prepared in terms of the knowledge base and the expectations, and we have to get there very, very quickly.
The problem with education in America is a problem of trying to use a bureaucratic form to do what is basically a cultural and moral mission.
It's important for business leaders to recognize they play an important role in the vibrancy of the community.
I always felt that as a pediatrician, I was also an educator because the trust that people have in us.
We know that when parents know their children are in an academic crisis, they will move mountains.
The most important thing for parents to do is spend time in human interaction with children.
My goal as a community leader now is to create responsible, engaged citizens. I have to emulate what I want them to do.
And now, here's your hosts, Elaine V. Scott and Rick Stevens.
Good afternoon. This is Rick Stevens with co-host Elaine Scott from Birth to Work Radio, and it's a real pleasure to be with you here today as we talk about a subject that is vitally important to all of us, no matter where we are, particularly those of us who are responsible about raising our children and the future citizens in this nature. Today, we're delighted to have with us Judy Jennings, who's a physical therapist and really an expert on baby development. And the reason this is so critically important is we learn more and more about early childhood development. It becomes important what we as parents know about what goes on in that really 0 to 5 age time frame, because as parents or as caregivers or as grandparents, we are ultimately responsible as the first educators for those youngsters as growing up. So with that as kind of a way of background, Elaine, now let me turn it back to you and get our dialogue going today.
Thank you, Rick. I feel like I'm introducing an old friend, although I would say that Judy and I have only known each other a short time. Judy Jennings actually served as one of the lead consultants and spokespersons for the American, the Physical Therapy Association,
yes,
Judy?
Physical Therapy Association.
In a recent article published in Newsweek magazine on tummy time. And this article, as I understand from the people who actually supervised and promoted the asking of the questions and the gathering of the data and everything, was this notion of the significance of the amount of time that kids are spending on their backs versus the amount of time they're spending on their tummies is a increasingly significant conversation at conferences of physical therapists all around the country and one of great concern. And in doing this article and in publishing this survey, the idea was to begin to get the information out that maybe there's a part of early childhood development we need to revisit, not only from the doctor's point of view or the physical therapist's point of view, but from the public point of view. Would that be accurate, Judy?
It is. In 1992, when America decided to advise young parents to put their babies to sleep on their back, we did have a decrease in the amount of SIDS around the country. Unfortunately, now 17 years later, we understand that the second part of that message should have been back to sleep, tummy to play. And that's now getting out to young moms, but it isn't still widely known around the country the way that it should be.
Judy, you've been a physical therapist for 40 years.
At least.
And you have seen a lot of things come and go. Would that be fair to say?
It is. It is fair to say that.
And yet you have a point in your understanding of how kids grow and develop and how they march into school and certain markers about how they get ready. How has that changed over time?
Not only what I have seen, but with many, many therapists around the country, we are seeing a decrease in skills, not just gross motor skills, but the ability of a child to speak, the eye tracking, the cognitive awareness, the ability to remember the children in their classrooms.
When did you actually begin to see more of this than usual?
In the study that was published by the American Physical Therapy Association, they looked back over 6 years, and I've noticed it since 1985.
And that was actually when some of the original organizations, the Pathways was formed in 1985. So if you were seeing it in 1985, that means it was actually beginning prior to that.
Well, I should clarify. What I'm seeing now is the residual of not enough tummy time.
Okay. And tummy time relative to what's the ratio of tummy time versus back time?
Let's see how I can put that.
Compared to where we were, for example, Judy, where parents were when they were putting kids to sleep on their tummies and there was not this focus on the back to sleep, about how much time did babies
spend? When
they
slept on their tummies, they spent 20 hours on their tummies.
About 20 hours.
And at this point in time, now they're spending 20 hours on their back.
Okay.
When we did the research in 2001, we found that we could have normal developments at 6 months if the babies were put on their tummies many times during the day on a schedule, the way that they would be on a schedule for feeding or for diaper changes or for naps. Too many moms think that they need to put the babies on the tummy for 15 minutes at a time. Well, a newborn baby can't tolerate 15 minutes, so it needs to be scheduled in small increments as a baby can tolerate.
Okay, so what's happening, though, is that's either not being scheduled or it's being, you know, it gradually falls out of the schedule, that sort of thing.
If a mommy waits too long, if they wait until 1 month before they start tummy time, the baby's head will have grown over that course of a month.
Okay.
But the neck muscles won't have gotten stronger.
Okay.
And when you put the baby on the tummy and the baby tries to lift their head to look from side to side, it's not going to be comfortable, and they will cry. So mommy says, my baby doesn't like tummy time.
So they did that, though, because they were told that if they just waited until the baby could lift its head, that was the correct time to start putting it on its tummy.
I'm not sure where they're getting their information. There are many, many sources that are now beginning to talk about tummy time.
Okay.
My source is from the research that I did.
That you did, and so the work that you did. Fair enough. Well, that's good stuff. There's no intent to, one of the things that you'll find about the work that we do is that there's nobody's looking around for who to, we're looking how do you find a solution and fix the problem of possibly kids needing to do this. And I know that I've heard that people said, well, there's no scientific correlation between the time amount of time kids spend on their tummy and anything else. Is that necessarily
an accurate
statement?
There are more research projects being done continually, and one was just done not too long ago that found that if a baby has around 83 minutes of tummy time, they tend to have better gross motor skills.
Okay. And 83 minutes a day?
83 minutes a day.
Is that true?
I have found that if you start a baby off with 1 to 2 minutes, that baby will be very tolerant of the tummy position, and that time on the tummy will grow. In fact, it usually becomes a preferable position because the baby has more control. They can see things. They can get their hands in their mouth. It's a calming position. They extend around 4 or 5 months to be able to reach out and grab toys. And then eventually that moves into mobility with tummy crawling and then all fours and then finally walking. So it is a stepping stone process.
So talk to us a little bit about how these early motor skills translate into competencies as the children grow. For example, sitting on your tummy with your mouth, the development of your mouth and your speech and your visual, that sort of thing.
Let me go back and say that when they're sitting in a semi-sit position in some kind of a container, they really are not working. They aren't getting toys. They aren't interacting with toys. They aren't doing much motor development. So If you flip that and say that when they're on their belly, they are working very hard. They're developing the core strength, the neck muscles, the back muscles, the tummy muscles. They are developing the palms of their hand when they push on a flat surface. It helps that hand develop the web space that is necessary for them to pick up Cheerios with two fingers, with using a pencil and a paper, with being able to pull up the zipper on their coat, all of the precursors to having fine motor control that would eventually lead to precision in the hands for a job. And if they don't, when my kindergartners that don't get this amount of weight bearing through the hands come into kindergarten at 5 with a gross grasp where they hold on to the pencil with all 5 fingers and press on the pencil so hard that the lead breaks. This used to be a 3-year mannerism, and now we're seeing it in 5-year-olds.
And how does that change? I mean, how long does it take to make up for that sort of thing, say, down the road? If the teacher is got more than a handful of kids in the class with all of that similar syndrome, holding the pencil in a gross way, does the teacher have a mechanism in place by which they can manage that? And we need to take a quick break. But before we go into that break, I just want to have us come back and take a look at the significance of other factors like that, like the hand movement, the eye movement, and speech development. Okay? We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Birth to Work Radio. This is Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott with Judy Jennings. Judy's a physical therapist, and we've just had a dynamic first segment. And in fact, there was so much going on as I'm sitting listening, I thought it may be worthwhile to summarize what I think I heard, and so we make sure all of our audience picks up, because I think the points covered in the first segment are so critically important. And essentially, there is a tremendous epidemic, if I could use those words, of sudden infant death syndrome, which has been referred to as SIDS, in the early 90s. And pediatricians began, as a result of that, advocating that babies sleep on their back to avoid the possibility of SIDS. And the good news was, it worked. You know, significant reduction in the incidence of SIDS. The challenge was, however, is that a number of years later, pediatricians, physical therapists like Judy begin to see some developmental delays in children. And what Judy has been doing is kind of launched off on this, you know, studies, analysis, working with many others and others doing the same thing. It says, gee, you know, well, we got the part right about preventing SIDS. We may not have gotten the part right about how much time newborns and infants ought to spend on their tummy. And so, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics, you know, recommends that babies do, in fact, spend time on their tummy. Judy, your perspective is back to sleep, tummy to play.
Exactly.
Is a good thing for parents to recognize. And while there was so much focus on SIDS, that second half of the message, tummy to play, probably just has not gotten out at the same level, because, you know, I think probably many says, oh, don't worry, they'll get there. And I think, you know, this whole notion gets tied back to, in terms of putting the infants, the babies in their tummy, causes them to kind of reach for the toys, raise their head up, do all I'll call the muscle development. But I think we're also learning that this movement is so critical to connecting the synapses of the brain, which are all about motor skills, the environment, everything goes along with that, which is so critical to early childhood development. And without that, we may see developmental delays later on in the child's life. With that background, hopefully that helps all our listeners. Judy, did I get it right?
I think so. That's a pretty good synopsis.
Yeah.
Judy, you were called on, as I mentioned earlier, as someone who could speak on this subject because of the amount of experience you've had and because of your heartfelt commitment to this issue. I would like to bring up another aspect of it that is important, and Rick alludes to it briefly in terms of the potential long-term effects of the amount of time that kids spend on their tummies and you know, do these gross motor activities so that the brain develops. And that has to do with the long-term implications, even just a matter of months in terms of growth and development and potential social development for kids. Can you address that a little bit?
The research that has been out looked at the delays that were seen by the American Academy of Pediatrics and found that the babies were walking sometimes even early at 9 months and felt there were no delays that were being recorded. We find that babies walk at 9 months because it's easier. They don't have to hold their head up. Their head just sits on their shoulders. And when we look more closely at the 3-year-olds, the 4-year-olds, the 5-year-olds, we're finding that there are many pieces that were not filled in from the early years. And as I mentioned before, the fine motor control is not there. The eye tracking that is so necessary from left to right for children to read seems to be missing with some children. The babies that are breastfed tend to be moved from one side and then the other side, but babies that are bottle fed oftentimes are only bottle fed with the mommy's one arm. And so the babies tend to look in one direction more than another direction. So when I did my treatment with many children, I had to teach mommies to transfer that baby from arm to arm so that the eye tracking was developed for both the right and the left direction. The speech therapy comes in with another piece of the puzzle, and at about 2.5 months, a baby should start to have head control forward. Their head should be able to come off the ground when they're on their back against gravity. And when babies don't have that head control for both the back of their body and their tummy muscles, it seems that there is a lag in their motor development of their mouth. They mulch their food, they just chomp down, they don't move it back and forth with their tongue, and they have more trouble with their speech development. And we have almost an epidemic of little kids coming in now that have speech delays. And when we get the core muscles stronger with therapy with OT and PT, it seems that the speech also seems to click in a little bit faster. That's been my experience.
Has any of your research or any of the studies shown that there is, in fact, a correlation between this development and the amount of time that infants spend on their tummies?
We need it badly. We really do need to have some good research to have a longitudinal study that will look at the amount of tummy time that babies are getting and what's happening with them academically. There's always a lag between what's seen in the clinic and what comes out in research. And my experience is that it's in the clinic.
As a business leader and who's out in the community in many, many different venues, you know, as we think about, as Elaine and I call it, the birth to work pipeline, we know that there are, you know, more and more challenges about youngsters' capabilities in our education system. And while lots of time and energy is spent on education, whether it's, you know, primary, secondary, or post-secondary, this whole notion about what goes on in the first 5 years of life is one that we believe is just so critically important, and helping parents really understand their role and responsibility, because having some data and background to support this will be very powerful. Because all too often, you know, we may fix something like in terms of great success in reducing the significant numbers of SIDS cases, but the flip side is it sounds like we have greater incidence, and maybe this is what you're seeing, greater incidence of autism, a greater incidence of the inability of children to do certain motor skills that they used to be able to do at early ages. Is that kind of what the message is that you're seeing?
I can't tie them together because, again, I haven't had research past, my research was at 6 months. So I did see a significant number of babies that had less gross motor skills at 6 months. My feeling, my gut reaction with these little kids that I see in my preschool programs is that they're not coming in with the gross motor skills and then again the fine motor and the speech and the cognitive skills that they should have for that age.
Yep.
It doesn't mean they can't catch up. It doesn't mean that they don't have normal IQ. It doesn't mean that they're not equipped to be all they can be, but it takes more work for the teachers to be able to pull out of them and to put in all of the dynamics, all of the education that needs to be put into a child in order for them to graduate with honors and to go on to secondary programs and training programs.
And Judy, that was my remark right before our last break, was that there's been a tendency to point the finger and say that teachers are not doing a good job in many cases with their little ones, and they're passing them on, and by third grade these kids are not doing very well, and what we have to have is more school and more classroom time. And I have long believed that there was a need, actually, probably for more play, where play has been cut out of many schools. And kids have been asked to do more seat time, and little boys are asked to do more staying in place, when in fact little boys need to be out more.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
They need more time. They need to roughhouse. But with, as I understand it from the research that I was reading by a woman who just finished a book called The Trouble with Boys in Chicago, she said boys need to roughhouse, but with the incident at Columbine, there is in many schools been this clampdown on no tolerance for any kind of roughhousing or any kind of behavior that might actually be typically boy.
There is good research out there that indicates that when children get good PE programs, their scholastic scores go up, and that PE is so vital to a child's well-being. And too often, recess is cut out
right. If
a child doesn't get their work done.
Right.
And so we complicate the issue, and then when they come in to do the afternoon, our little kids are not organized, they're not integrated, they're not pulled together, and they become problems and end up in the offices. So the recess is tremendously vital, and I try to teach all of my teachers as much as possible, you are exactly right. That child needs to get out and run. They need to swing. They need to twirl. They need to go down slides. They need to play tag.
They need to brachiate, and they need to walk on balance beams.
They do. They do need to.
Exactly. And the brachiation ladders are the things that have been cut out, those monkey bars, what they call them.
Yep.
And I know very well the significance of that to the lateral movement and the cross patterning that facilitates.
Yes.
And I'm very concerned about that. Well, now let me offer another piece here. I've been a fan and a director and a parent development and parent resource development in a Montessori school for over 10 years in my previous years of experience and work. And one of the things that I became very clear about was that this notion of early development in all of these spaces, these full multisensory environments, was very much known 100 years ago.
So, Elaine, let's take a pause for a break and follow that thought right when we get back from the break.
This System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce by Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott is winning accolades as an accessible business novel with a striking new perspective about community collaboration and workforce development for the 21st century. In the book, community leaders in the fictional town of Chantilly learn why they must think and act differently to build a sustainable workforce for the future. Real stakeholder leaders from around the country have used the book as a model for their own communities. Vicki Hogan is president and CEO of the Vermilion Advantage in Danville, Illinois. She and the Vermilion team have been collaborating with Birth to Work to implement the strategies outlined in the system.
Your book is really incredible. It's like a roadmap that in story form really sheds the light on a national issue and makes it obvious in a story form who the key stakeholders really have to be to create sustainability.
Sustainable results will only come from collaboration, alignment, and integration of the people, programs, and ideas of a unified community. The system, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, shines a light on the challenges that communities across the country are facing right now and the forces that drive and influence people's behaviors. Stakeholder leaders such as Angela Phillips-Diaz are using the book as a guide for effective stakeholder action. In her work with the University of California, Riverside, she's charged with improving the college-going rate in the region.
I literally have the book on my desk and use it as a reference tool all the time. It's been invaluable to me.
This system, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, is the guide for stakeholder leaders who want to do business as usual in a new way. Buy it today at birthtowork.org or amazon.com.
And welcome back. Judy, if I could just grab onto you and hold you in my space for a few days, I would probably run you ragged with millions and millions of questions, but not the least of which is one that comes up for me, having been a student and a layperson around this topic since 1977. And I became interested in this area and was privileged to attend a workshop, a week-long study course called How to Multiply Your Baby's Intelligence in Philadelphia at the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. What I learned was how to observe my baby as a well baby. How do I watch the child? Not how do I train the child's brain like a machine, but how do I watch the child and watch the physical expressions of function, gross motor function and visual and auditory and the verbal function, and how, as you would say earlier, you were talking about what were the markers. I knew what markers I was looking for. And once I became adept at this and my child got older, I wanted a more social environment, one where parents were maybe of like mind. And the closest that I came to that was in a Montessori environment. But in that Montessori environment, I found out that Maria Montessori, had been talking about very similar kinds of gross motor development and functions in what would be now over 100 years. And sure. My question is, what has been the challenge, and what is the challenge in getting people to adopt and embrace this kind of thinking?
There are wonderful experts around the country that travel and try to teach teachers how to bring their material alive to children.
Uh-huh.
And textbooks are only supposed to be a resource, but not supposed to be the end-all in lessons. So the
okay.
teachers that have experiential lessons. And one that I can tell you that happened in the school I work in was a fifth grade teacher who wanted to teach children about waves. And he had many different things lined up in the hallway where children could go and see the vibration of something that would create sound. The children were absolutely elated. And I know they're going to remember that lesson. That's experiential.
Well, I think what I'm getting at is that I think that there was and there has been an assumption that early development just happens. It just happens. And that what I heard a pediatrician say to me recently when I was telling him about this article on Tummy Time that appeared in the Newsweek publication, he said, you know, he said, what you're saying to me is interesting. He said, what I learned in school, in medical school, was that the brain developed and the body followed.
No, that's old knowledge.
He said,
well, I didn't say
and then
that.
He was, you know, he's an older pediatrician, but he said, that's what I learned. So if that is the case, and many education programs are based on the idea that the body will come along as the brain grows, wouldn't you say we got it backwards, really?
The new things that are out, the new way of looking at it is that movement creates the synapses that Rick was talking about, that every action creates a brain reaction. And so the brain develops according to different stimuli that a child goes through. And it doesn't mean that a child in a wheelchair isn't going to be intelligent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that every child is going to have a different environment in which they are learning. And the more experiences they have, just take crawling, for example, on the belly, the more times that they try to do this, the stronger the patterns in the brain develop, and eventually it becomes a very easy thing for them to do. The first time they do it, it's very, very difficult. As they practice it, they get better. And so the brain develops around those actions that take place motorically.
So it is, in fact, the opposite of what was thought to be true. There was no indictment, but that's what they thought to be true. Would that
a
be
long
fair
time
to say?
Ago. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I was taught that in school as well.
Oh, okay. Didn't we have that discussion, Rick?
We certainly did. And so the richness of multisensory input is an important part about early childhood development, because not only does it help in terms of all the sensory work, whether it's motor skills or hearing or sight or even taste or touch, all of those become input and pathways getting to the brain, which then helps close synapses, create those experiences that are not all part about early brain development. And the more that children have multisensory input, then the quicker that development begins to occur. Now, I've just tried to take a whole bunch of things and put them together, but does that make sense?
Yes, yes. And the beauty of this is that the human organism is plastic. If a child has a problem, it doesn't mean that it's cut in stone. We can fix that child. There's always a chance for the parents to make their little children be better, do better, think better. When we are in school, there's always a chance that we can find that button to make that child pick up some new knowledge.
I'm going to support you here. What's interesting about what you're saying, and this is why when people ask me, they said, Elaine, you've been talking about this 30 years, and they said, you know, what makes you think that there's anything going to be done about it? I said, because it's not about spending money. It's about the very thing that so many people our age and around our age have known for a long time, and that was when they were kids, they were outside. They were climbing trees. They were riding bikes until the sun went down. They were constantly creating new kinds of environments and tree houses, and they were building things with their hands, and they were getting their knees scraped up, and they were running and jumping everywhere. But imagination and problem solving were running wild.
Yes.
But what has happened in the interim?
What I would also say is, when you hear about a one-year-old who's able to sign and therefore, you know, may not be able to talk but is able to sign and communicate with parents, or a child who's 3 years old who's able to read, you know, that is a product as much about the environment and the opportunities and the creation and the movement that many more children are capable of, but we tend to wait in terms of for school, and this is really about the importance of parents can play and really creating the right environment so that early childhood development can develop at a rate much quicker than typically we give children credit for.
Yes.
And my importance for parents is to understand that that first 6 months is very, very important. It is the first building block period of time, and tummy time is a portion of that. The other thing that I would say is it's moderation. There are four sides to a baby, so the baby needs to play on the side, on the right side, on the left side, on the back, on the tummy, and move around to swings that have movement, move around and touch things like puppy dogs and kitty cats and experience things with their fingers. That sensory motor time begins in infancy, early infancy.
Well, talk to me a little bit about, given you were talking about sensory environments, and again, they're not... I want to come back to the notion of little ones learning to read and what that means from several levels. But I also want to talk about the confusion that parents are forced to sort through about the value of watching videos and sitting in a container and just watching something. I want you to talk a little bit about, Judy, what's actually going on in the brain as a little one, since this is specifically aimed at talking about the babies.
We think of the semi-sit position as the couch potato position. And the position of semi-sitting is not doing really a whole lot for that baby. They don't have to work to do anything. They don't have to interact with anything. The Einstein videos have some value, but everything, again, I'm going to say is in moderation. And time for that child to be on the floor doing their own problem solving, their own reaching out for the yellow toy instead of the red one, their own problem solving of how to get their fingers to their mouth because their fingers taste good and, that's a part of my body. It's a total picture. It's not one-sided, and I think that when a baby's in a container, it is pretty much one-sided.
So it limits the ability of the child to move so much that it cuts down on very important time in what we call, what Montessori called a sensitive period, and I think you had a similar name for it. Is that correct?
Piaget called it the sensory motor period of time.
The sensory motor period of time, where you have a window where certain things are just, your body's focusing on actively developing those particular capabilities, right?
When a baby's first little, senses have to register what their body is and what the blanket is. They don't even know that their body is different than the blanket. And so a lot of things happen to them, sight, taste, smell, touch. Mm-hmm. And they have to learn to identify those things before they can put motor to what their body is experiencing.
And thank you, and that's very, very helpful. And Rick, when we come back, I want to come back to this notion of the environment that we can support as a community to help kids, not just in the home, but in the community, in the neighborhoods, to help kids grow and become more sensorially aware. That's what Birth to Work is all about. We'll be right back. Well, I feel like we're moving right along here, and part of what I wanted to discuss before we have to give up some of this precious time with Judy and the remarkable things you're telling us and the important things you're sharing with us. We have a sense that mommies and babies are a unit. They're together, and they help and support, and they grow one another. A mother grows just as much as the baby does in her own way, wouldn't you say, Judy?
I do, yes.
When you have a little one, it changes your whole world, and as parents, your world is never the same when you have a baby. But it's also true that children don't just live with their mommies in a house. They live with their mommies in a neighborhood, and they live in some kind of neighborhood. They live in communities, and the notion of how to help parents help kids. We talk about parental responsibility, but parents also have caregivers, other caregivers. There are grandparents. There are places that kids are involved with daycare. All sorts of people need to be involved in this conversation about what little ones need. Would you agree with that?
I agree.
And that we should not make any small issue of the need for people who are skilled, such as yourself. I applaud the courage of the American Physical Therapy Association to start the ball rolling on this conversation, because in my experience all across the country, I find people with a similar story. And no matter who I talk to, they've all got a little one that isn't doing as well as they thought they were going to do. And you can usually pin it back to some kind of, again, misunderstanding about early development functions. But that said, there's also a leadership function in a community, which is part of what Birth to Work is about, and that's talking about parks and bicycle paths and places for families and kids to be that we think is another factor in this, because all of those things send messages back to families, they send messages back to parents that kids matter and that they're important. And Rick, you were talking a few minutes ago about an environment where kids learn to read early. I learned that, you know, that was certainly a very doable skill, and that two and a half was not early, too early to read if you knew, understood the process of how the eyes develop. And reading, we're talking the kind of comprehension that comes from things that are in your environment. For example, kids see the big M. They see the big McDonald's sign. They see these letters and things in their environment. They're all just part of their environment. That's not a, you're not forcing kids to do things any more than to recognize a McDonald's sign any more than you are recognizing a tree. I mean, they're there. You're just naming them for kids. And so, Judy, talk to me a little bit about, and our listeners, about the place of the child and the way parents talk to kids and how much difference that can make in the life of the child.
Let me make sure that I have in a couple things for parents of little infant to think about. Most of the time, moms have a good sense of whether their baby's progressing or not.
Ah, good. And thank you.
If they don't think that things are going well, and everybody says to them, oh, they'll grow out of it, everything will be fine, trust your gut and get a counselor, a pediatric physical therapist or occupational therapist or a well baby trainer to work with you to set up the home so that these babies can get the best knowledge from those that understand baby development to moms that want it. And sometimes 2 months is not, you know, that's a good time to get some advice from somebody else. So I wanted to get that in.
Setting up the home. Perfect. Okay, thank you. That's a good point. And inviting people and not being afraid that you're asking for way too much when your child is just barely a few weeks old. That is a very critical period, right?
It is. And if a baby only turns their head one direction and their head seems to be stuck on their shoulder, that needs professional help. If the baby's not holding their head up and they're not on their elbows at 2 months and they're not looking both directions, that needs professional help. It doesn't mean that it's going to be extensive professional help, but there may be exercises that one or two times that baby will be right back on track.
Are there places that people can locate such help all across the country? I mean, this shows
that
all across the country.
American Physical Therapy Association, APTA.org,
okay,
has a place where they have find a PT or find a therapist in your location. That's one source. Most cities have, your physician should be able to tell you PTs in the area who work with babies. And I just want moms to know that if they have a gut feeling that their baby's not on track, they need to follow it.
Well, we're working to support that. Obviously, we're not in the early child development. That's not one of the things we're advocates for and why we would want people to contact someone like yourself or your organization, because, perfect example, as we discussed on the show, the information that was once taught about how the brain works is now not the information that's taught. So you clearly want to be with someone who's up on that kind of the newest knowledge and the newest information, right?
Correct.
And so that's why you want your help in that area. But as you said, it's also good for you to trust your own gut feeling.
Especially if a baby has a flat spot on some place on the skull. That's an indication that they're spending way too much time in one position where the head's being smooshed against a hard surface a swing or like the bed or like a bouncer seat or the car seat. And they need a variety of positions in order to make sure that the head develops in all four directions.
That's terrific. Well, the idea here is that we have a place now where we would ask people to go and look. We also offer, as part of the work that we do, a new parent program, but it's not in the physical. We support you, and we really would like to use your brochure and materials and things like that to support the issue. And we invite people who are working with families and working with kids, you know, to come to our website and to let people know who they are and to become members, where, because in our site they can connect up with each other and really support this whole issue. Wouldn't you agree, Rick?
Well, there's no question about it. That's why we try to help pull community stakeholder leaders together. And you talk about, you know, the role that community leaders can play in creating environments for families and, you know, places where people want to live, work, play, and learn at all age levels. But we also talk about where organizations would put funding behind and support, whether it's parent education, you know, working with hospitals, pediatricians, working with physical therapists, or, you know, working with the school systems, and or all the other elements. I mean, that's really what Birth to Work is all about. And the more and more we spend time in these discussions, the more and more we get back to, oh, this early learning phase, this, you know, kind of birth to five is just such a critical area. And the environment we see is, used to be parents used to spend an awful lot of time with their children, who were having kids themselves. So, you know, like grandparents, like myself, who's got six grandkids. But in today's environment, as people continue to move around, parents really do need some help in understanding it. So the work that you're doing, Judy, and or, you know, programs that are very similar to this, give parents the right education they need to give their child a much better early start.
And that said, Judy, the thing that we found over time, and I found this in particular because I talk about this subject a lot, is that many, many, many times when you go to someone and you ask a friend or you ask even your own doctor sometimes for help, they'll look at you like, I have no idea what you're talking about, or this too will pass, or they will say things, not because they're being malicious or because they don't care, but because they're still working. They're perhaps, in some cases, they're working on old data, or they're working from their own experience. And in these days, it's good to have a resource like the Physical Therapist Association, where you're specifically engaged with that action of physical human development that is critical to the brain development that is so necessary for great and capable people to develop down the road.
Build little bodies to be all they can be.
For little bodies to be all they can be, and that's a good message. And I'm wondering, Judy, did you have any questions that you would want to ask of us?
No, I just want to thank you with all my heart for letting me air some of my passions and some of my concerns, and hopefully this will help many, many new parents and certainly many babies.
So, Judy, this is Rick. Do you have a website that you'd be happy to give out for people to get more information?
My website is www.fit-baby.com.
Terrific. It's a great opportunity. And for those of you on the listening to the show today, if you have questions, want to get our insights, by all means, please send an email to info@birth2work. That's birth2work.org. And we'll be happy to help make those connections. So, Judy, it's been great talking to you. Elaine, do you have some closing comments?
I would say that one of the great opportunities that we have in the work that we do at Birth to Work is to connect up people whose life and whose work is not just about doing a job, but about making a difference. And Judy, you continue to be engaged and involved. Like you, we care deeply about making a difference for our kids because it makes a difference for our country. And we are very grateful to you for your time and for your representation. And if we may be of service to you at any time, I hope that you and the organization will let us know, because we would like to do everything we can to continue to get this message out. You're terrific. This is Birth to Work Radio. This is the voice of the community, stakeholder leader, and we look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thank you for joining us on Birth to Work Radio. For more information about Birth to Work, to stream or download podcasts of archived radio programs, or to purchase a hard copy or downloadable version of Rick and Elaine's book, The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, please visit our website at birthtowork.org. That's birth2work.org. We invite you to send us your feedback and questions directly by emailing info@birthtowork.org. Birth to Work Radio, the voice of community stakeholder leaders.